Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Amud Aleph. We're continuing with the medicinal cures that the Gemara is laying out for different types of diseases. The chazito, as Rashi says here, is yalefet, some sort of warts that grow on the body. The Gemara mentions chazito with regards to the mumim of a kohen or a bechor. Leite shav chite araznaito should bring 7 wheat kernels. Araznaito, as Rashi says, are chitim gasim. These are fat or big wheat kernels. V'niklinhu, and you should roast them, amara charato, on a new spade. V'nofik mishcha minayhu, they will exude a certain oil that will come out of them. V'nishuf, and then you rub that on the wart, and that should help this situation out. Rav Shimi Barashi, avadle lahu ovid kochavim, the davar acher. Shimi Bar Ashi did this for an Ovid Kochavim, the Davar Acher, Rashi says it's Tzorat, for leprosy, V'itzi, and he was cured. Now, that's interesting, as Tosafot already notes, and actually is a problem that has come up again today, Hiksha Rabbi Nechanan, Amaylo Asur L'Rapot HaOvid Kochavim. How is he allowed to cure an Ovid Kochavim? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah notes the fact that you're not allowed to take care Mi'aleid, Menik, for an Ovid Kochavim, except if they pay you, because Megadol Ovidat Kochavim, because you're ending up expanding the worship of Avodah Zarah in the world, and therefore, we don't want you involved with that at all. Now, you could argue that that's only when it's directed towards Avodah Zarah, but maybe when it's not Avodah Zarah, it's less problematic. But then the Tosfot here gives 3 answers. Vomari. These were experimental treatments, and therefore, so that they can be guinea pigs in this way, and that's okay, because the cure is not being used in a way that is certain, but rather the uncertainty is what gives you permission in using the cure in this way to test it and see if it works. Bishari Mishum Eva. So this is what you had suggested, which is that he's known, he's a well-known doctor, and people know to come to him, and he's allowed to treat because of Eva, which is the animosity that would grow if they only treated the Jews and not the non-Jews. Oshema, lo shayach kan, migadel ben lavodat kochavim, kum yaledet umenika. Here Tosafot gives this petach, which is when you're birthing or nursing, those are things that are directly related to the growth, the successful maturity of the child, and therefore you are really assisting in the process of bringing another Oved Avodah Zarah into the world. Here, it's just maybe extending the life, helping them out. It's not as directly connected to the successful growth of that individual. This has come up a lot lately because of the controversy of treating terrorists. In situations like today, where there are terrorist attacks, the 2 things that come up are, one is the international law, is that when you get to a scene, whoever is injured the most severely or the most critically gets treated first, irrespective of their position in the situation, which would mean many times that the terrorists would get treatment before the victims, because they are usually more critically wounded if somebody has neutralized them. The second thing is the treatment of a terrorist. So even if you believe that, as many do, there is a distinction between Oveid Kochavim and non-Oveid Kochavim, which would then permit you to treat a non-Jew in those situations, in a state of war, that is not the case. That when it's your enemy who is trying to kill you, there's clearly no obligation to treat such an individual, and one should not treat that individual, because all they're doing is assisting, like we say over here, with more Avodah Zarah, there you're just assisting with people who are going to try to kill you again. And so that's not something that is permitted. So most of the permission today to treat terrorists is the fact that the world opinion would not accept the fact that Israel does not, or lets them die on the scene. And therefore, the public image issues are what govern here because of the Chilul Hashem and the necessity to do that, rather than the halachic issues, which would dictate that we don't treat them in this situation. But mishum eva, which is basically what comes out in the end, then we have to make those decisions to treat, rather than to not treat. As far as order or hierarchy, there are ways to deal with that, and generally the victims do get treated first for a number of reasons, or the way that crime scenes have to be handled, that the medics are not allowed to attend to the terrorists until they are cleared. It means that you need a special sapper to come and people to come to make sure that they're not wired for a booby trapped as a bomb, and there are other things that they have to clear. So usually in that time, they're able to treat all the victims first. So for technical reasons, it ends up not being as much of an issue. But these issues come up, exactly what Tosafot is talking about here, in treatment. Not because, again, that today it might be perfectly okay to treat those non-Jews, but these are people who are at war with you, and therefore it presents the same issue as Oved Kochavim. Eva means ill will that would be created. Darchei Shalom, I think, might be an institution, versus Eva is a situational response. So a doctor that's going to treat, in Shom Eva, he has to treat in such situations. An institution that we give out money to non-Jewish Aniyim with Jewish Aniyim, that's a Darchei Shalom, that's an institution. In the end, they're both touch on each other, but I think Darchei Shalom is used when you're a positive statement of institutionalizing a solution. Right, so now, Amar Shmuel, Haiman de Machulei, Balonki de Parsai. He was hit with it seems over here, the translation of Balonki, according to most Mefarshim, you can see on the side by the Orach as well, is some sort of spear. Persian spears, which as Rashi notes, had poison. Rashi says they were made with poison built into them. Others say that they anointed them with poison afterwards. In order for them to be much more effective in their killing, it meant that even if you were just injured, the poison would then kill you, even if the injury was not life-threatening. So if you get hit by one of these, michya lo chaye, we know for certain you're not going to live. We don't have an antidote to that poison, so the person will not survive. But adahochi v'hochi, in the interim, nisfulei bisra shmeina, should feed him fatty meat, agumrei, that was roasted on coals, v'chamra chayo, and potent wine, non-diluted wine, efshar dechaye purta, because then he might survive for a short duration, mafki da beite, and he'll be able to give his last will and testament, he'll be able to give his final instructions. So you're just trying to postpone the inevitable, which is that he's going to die anyway, he's going to pass away. We just give him some time to be misader his inyanim before he passes away. Amar Rav Yehuda bar Avin, Haiman de Bolo Zibura, someone who swallows a wasp. Michya lo chaye, he will not survive. Adochi ochi, in the interim, Nashke Revi'oto de Chalo, Shamzag, here there's questions about the girsa, whether it's Shamzag or Shamgaz. Rashi here says that this is very potent vinegar. So it's very, very strong vinegar. Efshar dechaye purta, maybe he'll live for a short time. Umafki de beitei, and again, he'll be able to give instructions for his death, his last will and testament. Over here, it seems to be that the wasp issue is something that's still faced today. Which, first of all, wasps, unlike bees, are able to sting multiple times. That's number one. Number two is the allergies that we know about today. People are allergic to these stings, and if you get stung and it's not treated, which obviously in their day they didn't have an EpiPen to deal with these things, then someone's allergic to it will die from such stings, as well as the possibility that being stung inside one's throat would cause an expansion of the area of the throat and then cut off the ability to breathe. So there are numerous ways you could explain why this would be such an issue or a problem. And again, here, the treatments are not solutions to the problem, simply a way to postpone the inevitable death that will face this individual and give them time to deal with issues. I'm Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Achal basar shor belefet velan belevana belele yudalet otedvav bitkufat tamuz. Someone who eats an ox meat, belefet, with some sort of accompaniment, or sometimes it means turnip, velan, and then he sleeps, balivana, means he sleeps out in the field, in the open air, belele yudalet tedvav, which means the 14th or 15th of the month, which is the middle of the month, full moon, bitkufat tamuz, during the summer solstice. Again, tkufat tamuz could mean the actual solstice itself, or it could refer to the seasonal period of tkufat tamuz, which means generally from June 21st till September 21st, that's known as tkufat tamuz. So during that period of time, sleeping outside under the full moon, achzato achilu. He'll be taken over by achilu, which is either chills or fever. Tana, v'amimalei kreso mikol davar, achzato achilu. Someone who fills up his belly with everything will also be affected by this achilu, as Rashi says here, mikol davar shutovlo, things that he enjoys, umatok lechiko, and they are sweet to his palate, v'ochel mimenu kol davato, and he eats with abandon. He ends up with this problem, achilu. So again, it's from eating to one's, to way beyond their satiation, something that they really enjoy, Rashi says. Others suggest that it's irrespective of whether you enjoy it or not, just simply eating too much. Amra papa, afilu mitamre. Even if you just eat too many dates, that's also a problem. When it says pshita, what's the question? Dates are sweet. Dates are something people enjoy. Why would you think that there's any difference between dates and other foods? So katzakadat chamina hoyo v'amarmar tamre misav'an. Dates are such a great food that they satisfy. Umeshachanan, and they warm the body. Umeshal shalan, and they loosen one to the point where they relieve themselves regularly. Umeashran, and they give a person strength. Velo mefankan, and they don't make a person into someone who is spoiled or particular about their food. Amalo, maybe that type of food, which is all positive sides to it, that maybe something like that would not have this effect if you ate too much of it, that it would just affect you with achilu. Emelo, kamash malon, that even eating dates will have that same impact on you. My achilu. So now the Gemara finally asks, what is this achilu? I'm giving you the answer already. But my achilu, I'm Rabbi Lazar, ish shalatzamot. It's a fire within the bones. Again, that'd be fever or chills, something along those lines. My ish shalatzamot, what is the fire bones? I'm Rabbi ish garme. It just translates it into Aramaic. Garme is a bone in Aramaic. So Eish Garme, obviously they knew the disease by that name in Bavel. Eish Latzamot didn't ring a bell with them. Eish Garme did ring a bell with them. Mayasute, what is the cure for such achilu? Am Rabbi Amr Li'aim, my mother said, and as we noted before, if ever Rabbi says Amr Li'aim, it's not literally his mother because he was orphaned when he was very young. And Amr Li'aim is either his stepmother or his nurse that took care of him that he's referring to. Kulu shakyane tlata vishava vitresar. All types of drinks, medicinal potions that one has to drink, they are done in series of 3, 7, or 12 days. That's the period of time that you take such medicines. Depending on the situation, you have to know it's 3, 7, or 12. V'hai, but this cure, adamitze, until you are cured. Drink it until it disappears completely. Kulhu shakyane, any other drink that is medicinal in nature, aliberekana, you take it before you eat. V'hai, batar da'achal v'shate, this you take after eating and drink. V'ayo lebeta kise, and you have relieved yourself. V'nofik u'mashiyode, you come out and wash your hands. U'maitilei bona dishtitata, so then you bring this person, Bona, we saw in yesterday's daf as well. Bona is a Malay egg roof, a fistful. The shtita, the talfechei. Talfechei are lentils. Rashi says over here that the shtita is kemach, is lentil flour with salt together with it. Ubona de chamra atika, and a fistful of aged wine. V'nigvlinu ba'adei adodi, you knead them together, you mix them together, v'neichol, and then he eats this, v'nichruch v'sadine, and then he wraps himself up in his cloak, v'nigane, and then he falls asleep. V'leka denukei, do not wake him up, adekai minafshei, he has to wake up of his own volition, someone else shouldn't wake him up, v'chikai, and as soon as he wakes up, lishkalei l'sadine minei, take away his cloak, take away whatever he was using to warm himself up. Below, hadar ilave. If he doesn't, it'll return to him. The idea being, as Rashi describes over here, that this will cause him to sweat profusely. Both what he's eaten, as well as putting on all the warm garments, that will cause him to sweat. So you let him sleep and sweat it out. Don't wake him up to stop that process of sweating. And in addition to that, as soon as he wakes up, you take it away to stop the sweating. So that you let him cool off right away, and then that will remove the problem. Otherwise, it says that it will return to him. All right, now, here's some advice that is more broad in nature, and probably has good application today as well, which is Amalei Eliyahu the Rabbi Natan. Eliyahu told Rabbi Natan, Achol shlish, v'shatah shlish, v'anach shlish. When a person eats and drinks, this is the way that they should conduct themselves. They should fill themselves a third with food, one third with drink, And one third they should leave empty, meaning that they should not eat to full satiation. They rather should eat to two thirds of their capacity. And in using up two thirds of their capacity, only a third of it should be food and a third of it should be liquid. It's probably applicable today as well. It's probably just good advice in general, both from a diet standpoint as well as a nutritional standpoint, that a person eats in such a manner. The reason that's given here by the Gemara may be less relevant, which is l'shetichos tamod al miluecha, because when one gets angry, then they will expand in their anger, and if they're fully satiated and full, they're going to explode from that anger. So leave yourself some room so that when you get angry, right, you have room to expand. So that's probably less meaningful in terms of the reason, but in terms of health reasons, what they're suggesting here doesn't seem so far-fetched. Tani Rabbi Chiya, Arutzesh lo yavodi de choli me'ayim, someone who does not want to have stomach ailments, intestinal ailments, yayi ragil b'tibul kayitz v'choref, should always dip in the summer and the winter. They should dip their bread either into wine or into vinegar, and that will be good for their stomach, that will be good for their intestines. Sudatcha shanatcha mimena mishoch yadcha himenu. A meal that you enjoy immensely, pull yourself back from it, meaning don't fill yourself to satiation. Leave you some room. Don't eat so much that you are stuffed to the gills so that you can't enjoy any more food. Also, do not hold back when you have to relieve yourself and go to the bathroom. Ensure that you go right away and don't hold yourself back. So all of these are suggestions along the way of how to keep one's stomach and intestines working well, is the tibul, which is the dipping, and then the other two items are do not eat too much, and the last one is when you have to relieve yourself, make sure that you do it in a timely manner. Amar Ma'ukva, Haiman Deshati Tilya Chivoro, someone who drinks this Tilya Chivoro, this white Tilya, Rashi says over here, bad wine. It's a wine that either, you have to say, is extremely potent, or it's wine that has gone bad, or very low quality wine, but it's this Tilya Chivoro. Because if it happens, achazdo vitik. Because otherwise then he's overtaken by this vitik, which Rashi says is chalashut, which is a weakness that comes over him. Amar Rav Chisda, shitin minei cham rahavu. There are 60 different types of wines. Malio de kulu, the best of the best, is sumka rechantna. It is dark reddish, aromatic wine, which again today would probably be the similar an idea, something that has a strong aroma to it and taste and flavor to it, as well as a deeply colored. Gria de Kulu, the worst of these 60 is Tilya Chivoro, is this white bad wine or pungent bad wine. Amar Rav Yehuda, Ayman Diyotiv Betzfarne Nisan Gabe Nura, a person who sits in the mornings of Nisan meaning in the springtime when it's cold in the mornings, and he sits by the fire in the mornings to warm himself up, the Shayef Mishcha, and he anoints himself with oil, the Nofik V'yotiv V'shimsha, and then afterwards goes out and sits in the sun, Achazdo Vitik, that will cause him to be weak. Tan Rabbanan, Hikiz Dam V'shishmesh Mitato Havyan Lo Banim Vitkin, a person who bloodlets, then has intercourse with his wife, from which a baby is conceived. Havilo banim vitkin, he'll have weak children. This goes back to a number of times we've discussed this. The idea that when a person was engaged in intercourse, the things that they see, or their state of being, or the environment, impact on the children that come out. That's the belief of the Gemara. So if you're looking at, remember we saw this in the Agarat of the Churban, they used to bring the young children and tie them up by the bed so they'd see these beautiful children, because they thought that would be mashpia, that would influence the child that was born. We've seen that also by colors, or we see it where the Gemara talks about the location of where one has intercourse also impacts on the child, if you do it in the mill, if you do it here. Here's another one of these cases where a person who is weak because they have just bloodlet, and then they have intercourse, that weakness will impact on the child that is born. Hikizu shnehem b'shimshu. They both let blood before they had intercourse. Having then banim balei ratan. Then they'll have children who are balei ratan. Rashi goes super weak. Because there it's not one of the partners, but both partners are in that state of weakness. And that will influence even more so the child that is born. That's only if you didn't eat anything after the bloodletting. But if you eat something, there's no problem. Similar to today, if someone who donates blood, they don't let you leave until you eat something and you drink something, meaning to ensure that your full strength has returned. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Bamina Derech, someone who comes back from traveling, or the Shvayim Acherim is Batzoraim, Shimei Shmitato, and then has intercourse, Havilom Banin Vitkin, also will have these weak children, because here the person is tired from the travel, tired from the day's work, and therefore it's if you engage in that time period, it will influence the child again. Tan Rabbanan, Abami Beit HaKisei, Ayishamesh Mitato, Ashishaheh Shi'ur Chatzimil. After a person has relieved themselves in the bathroom, they should not have intercourse until they wait the amount of time of a Chatzimil, a half a meal, Mipnei. Sheshed Beit HaKisei Malevei Imo. The shade of the Beit HaKisei returns with this individual. Now, whereas this is not brought to halacha because of the shade aspect of it, it is brought to halacha that a person should wait a period of time after urinating before one has intercourse, and that's Gemara discusses in Nida, as well as brought down the halacha, not for the reasons brought here, but for other reasons that are stated there in terms of the changing over the biological mechanisms by which one relieves themselves and one reproduces. It's good to give time between the two of them, and for that reason it's suggested that one also wait in those situations. Bim Shimesh, if he does do that, Avyanan Banim Nichvim. And he has children that, Rashi over here says, Noflim El Tocholi, they fall from that, which could either be dropsy or epilepsy, comes about from that. That is connected to this shade of the Beit HaKisei. Tana Banan, Amishamesh Mitato Me'umad, someone has intercourse standing up, Uchazdo Avit. Then that person will be overcome with convulsions. Miyushav, he does sitting down. Uchasto, now either here we have delaria, which is one possibility, which is some sort of diarrhea, loose stool. But the Gemara is going to bring another case like this, so it makes it sound like here it's alaria, or spasms. He milamala v'udamato, if she is above and he is below. Uchasto dalaria. That's why they changed the gears over there to alaria, because over here it seems to be there's a different word, dalaria. My dalaria, I'm Rabbi Shua ben Levi, some dalaria. They ask, what is dalaria? He says, well, this is the cure for dalaria. Dardara, my dardara. What is this dardara? I'm Rabbiye Morika Duchuche. It's saffron that grows amongst the thorns. So that's the cure for it. Again, it doesn't address straight on what is the disease, what the issue is. It seems to be it's some sort of diarrhea or a passing of gas. Papa Olis Balale, Papa used to chew on it and then swallow it. Papi Olis Vishadile, he used to chew on it and then spit it out. Whether it was the sharpness or the nature of the saffron that they were using, whether they felt that it was better to swallow or spit it out, would depend on that. Amar Abaye, Mishenu Baki B'derech Eretz, person who is not an expert. Now, that is a strange term, an expert in intercourse. So Rashi explains to us over here that baki b'derech eretz means that he doesn't have strength to engage in marital relations. Leite gimel kfize kurtame dechuche. He should bring three pitchers. Kapiza, Rashi says, is a kli machzik gimel reviot. Something that holds three quarters of, quarter of a log is a revi'it, so three of those would be three quarters of a log. Kurtame dechuche, Rashi says, via krug, hagadel bekarka mizuval bezevel atzon. It's this krug that grows on well-fertilized areas that were fertilized by flocks of sheep. Vinediknu, and then you crush it up. Nishkinu bechamro, and then you roast it together with wine. Vinishte, and you drink it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, who seems to have used this, says, "Hein hein hechziruni lenaroti," that these things return me to my youth. Or in other words, this was the precursor to Viagra. And it's a suggestion Rabbi Yochanan used this. It seems that the ingredients are a little different than what we have today. But that's what the Gemara is suggesting over here, is some sort of youthful potion. Shlosha dvarim machshin kocho shel adam. There are three things that weaken an individual. Ve'elu hein. These are them. Pachat, derech, ve'avon. Pachat being fear. Rashi over here says pachat being fear is not sudden, shocking fear, or something where if someone is frightened, suddenly, but rather da'agash or du'eg al davar atid. It's a constant worrying, something that plagues the individual. It could be stress, but here Rashi says he's worrying about the future. Kagon tirod mizonot. He's worried about how he's going to make a parnosa, how he's going to make a living. Opachad oyev, or the fear of the enemy that is approaching. So it's not a fright, but rather a long-standing fear that one is, could be stressed out or enveloped by this constant fear. Derech here, and avon, Tosafot equates that in this way. It says, dagat avon, inami onesh avon. Person's fearful, not in the worrying about possibility of sinning, or worried about the punishment that will come for sin. Again, the reason Rashi and Tosafot are doing this is because pachad and avon aren't necessarily negative things. Pachad sometimes is a good thing. Or we're talking about yirat Hashem or yirat Hayom Hamut, positive aspect. But here they're talking about pachad, which is long-standing daga, which is just this unnecessary worrying, being plagued by anxiety, which is that it's okay to worry a little bit, but if you're plagued by it and it's constant, then the person loses strength. They're not functional anymore. The same thing with avon. You should be fearful of sinning. One should be fearful of the punishment of sinning. But if it becomes all-encompassing, then it takes over the person, makes them non-functional, and that's what the problem is. And derech also, traveling, as everybody knows, you travel, you come back weakened from the travel. Pachad dichtiv, libi sacharchar azvani kochi. So they're quoting psukim. Rashi here, sacharchar means mukaf da'aga, that my heart is surrounded by difficulties or worries, azvani kochi, and therefore my strength has left me. Derech dichtiv, ina baderech kochi. Right, the affliction of traveling took out my strength. Avon dichtiv kashal b'avoni kochi, that I was tripped up or weakened my strength because of my sins. So there, the Gemara quotes psukim that support this idea. Shloshad varim metizim gufo shel adam. Other passage here is metishim gufo shel adam. There are three things that cause an individual to be weakened. Ve'elohein achal me'umad. Person who eats standing up. Vishata me'umad. Drinks standing up. Vishimesh mitoto me'umad. Or engage in marital relations standing up. So all of these things hurt the body in a sense of weakening the body or causing it to deteriorate. Chamisha krovim demita yoter min achayim. There are five people who are closer to death than they are to alive. Ve'elohein. Achal ve'amad. Someone who eats and then immediately afterwards stands up. Shata, someone who drinks, ve'amad, and then immediately stands up. Hekiz dam, ve'amad, someone who bloodlets, and then stands up suddenly. Again, you can be sympathetic to this if you give blood and then suddenly stand up. A person feels faint. Person is weakened by this. Yashan, ve'amad, someone who is sleeping and suddenly pops up, jumps up. Shimesh mitato, ve'amad, someone engaged in marital relations and then again, immediately and suddenly stands up without waiting. It's just a short period of time. These things bring a person closer to death than life, probably along the lines of causing them to faint or to lose strength in those situations. Shisha ha'oseuta miyad met. Six things a person who does them dies immediately. Ve'eluhein. And this is the list that you have. Haba baderech v'nityaga. Person who is traveling and has now been worn down and tired from the travels. Hekiz dam. He bloodlets. V'nichnas lebeit ha'merchatz. Then goes into the bathhouse. Vishata drinks v'nishtaker, and he becomes drunk. V'yashan al gabi akarka, and then sleeps on the ground. V'shimesh mitato, and then engages in marital relations. The idea being here, and we're going to see this in 1 second, is that each of these items weakens the individual. And therefore, Amar Rabbi Yochanan v'usha san kesidran. You do them, all of them, and in order. Which means that here a person is doing all these things and activities that weaken the individual. So this leads to certain death because the person just has compounding a cumulative list of items that drain the strength of the individual. So if he does all of them in this order, that will finish him off. Amrabai kisidran mate, shalok kisidran chalish. If you do them in order, you die. If you do them all, but just not in this order, chalish, you are weakened by it. Now there is a girsa within Rashi that also applies this to the previous case, which is chamisha krovim lemita yoter min achayim. That there are five people that are closer to death than life. There we had a list of five things. Tosfot over here says, Mashma, afilu se'achad mehem bilvad. Even if you do one of them, that is sufficient. Meloked da'amrinan, On that, we don't say bina and kaseder. Unlike this list of six, where we say they have to be done altogether and sequentially, over there there's no such qualification. But there was a girsa that had that qualification in it, and therefore it would have the same requirements of kisidran. So that does what says it's not the case, but there were girsot that did have that case. Ini, is that really true? Vaha, mi'urat, avdilela avda tlat minayu. Mi'urat was some female owner of a slave that had him do three of these things. Omit, and he died. It says, that's not evidence. He was a weak consistency already. Therefore, he only needed three to finish him off. Most normal, healthy people would require all six of them to finish themselves off. There are eight items in which doing a lot of them is negative. Doing a little of them is positive. Ve'eluhein, derech. Traveling. Traveling on occasion is good. Traveling all the time is not good. Ve'derech eretz. Marital relations. A little bit is good. Too much is not good. Osher, wealth, in small doses is great. Too much wealth is problematic. Rashi says over here because it causes him to desist from learning Torah because he's so engaged in his business dealings and all the wealth, as well as the fact that it makes him haughty. And therefore it doesn't lead to a good outcome here. And therefore, a little wealth is good. Too much wealth is not good. Umilacha, work. Right? A little work is good. Too much work is not good. Yayin, wine. A little wine is good. Too much drinking is not good. And again, that today has been proven that drinking a little wine has positive health benefits. Drinking a lot of wine has very negative health issues. Vishina, sleep. It's a little bit of sleep is good. Too much sleep is not good. Chamin, hot waters. Hot water to drink and bathe oneself with. A little bit is good. Too much is not good. Bakazat dam and bloodletting. A little bit is good. Too much is not good. Shmona mema'atim et azera. There are eight things that cause one to be, whether it's less potent, have less semen. Ve'elohen, hamelach, salt. Ra'av, being very hungry. Va'netek. And tzara'at, which is leprosy, netek, which is a word that's used in the Torah to describe some of the leprosy. Bichia, crying. V'sheina agabi akarka, sleeping on the ground. V'gudgadaniot, which in the modern Hebrew would be cherries. In the time of the Gemara, it might be a clover. So it might be clover or cherries. Kashut v'shlo bizmana, hops, not in season. V'kazat dam lamato. And bloodletting down below, kiflaim, is twice as bad as all the others. I mean, it's a compounded effect. Tana, kishem shekasher lamata, kiflaim, just like bloodletting below is doubly worse than any of the other items we missed to mention in the list, kach yafel lamala kiflaim. Above, it's even twice as good as anything else that you can have. Amar Papa, here we have a definition. What is lamata or lamala? Lamata is lamata min abeitzim. Lamata means below the area of the seminal production. The mala is the mala min abeitzim, is above that area. Now, the Gemara wants to clarify because shot, shalob izmana, hops that are not in season. Tana, kishem shikashe, shalob izmana, just like it's negative or detrimental out of season, the hops. Kach yafe bizmana. In season, it is equally good. Amra papa, zmana, tamuz. What is the time in which it is considered in season? That is in the summertime. Shalob izmana, tevet, is the winter time. Yomei Nisan v'yomei Tishrei, the spring and the fall, lo malu v'lo kashu. They're not good, they're not bad, it's neutral in those periods of time. It's interesting here, I think Rav Papa, if I remember correctly, Rav Papa was a beer maker, along with Rava, and that might be why he was able to speak to the issues of the hops when they were in season, out of season, and the effectiveness of them. Amar, back to the Mishnah here. The reason that we got involved with this was because of the Kordiyaikus, which was this disease that the Gemara was discussing, the cures for that disease, or what it comes about from. And there we spoke about the fact that it was the Shedim from drinking too much wine from the gut directly from the press. So that caused this shade or this disease to take a hold of the individual. From that led into the stories about the Shedim, as well as to the medicinal cures that are mentioned here. Now the Gemara goes back to the halachic ramifications of this, which is Amar Kidvu Get Lishti, Vachazo Kordi Agus, he instructs them to write a get to his wife, and then he is gripped by this sickness. Then he relents on it after he's already been taken over by this problem, which doesn't leave him of sound mind. Second statement he makes has no bearing. Here you have machloket amoraim as to what that means. Tosafot says that it comes out of the miyutur alashon, the extraneous language of ein b'dvarav achronim klum. Why do you have to say that? Just say ein b'dvarav klum or achronim. What does that mean? Amar Rav Shimon Lakish, kotvim v'notim get the altar. You write and give the get immediately. The fact that his second statement means nothing tells you that you can give it right away. You don't wait until he's back and in sound mind. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, ein kotvim ela k'yishtafeh. Until he becomes of sound mind again, you do not give the get. Then what's the meaning of don't worry about his second statement? My time of the Reish Lakish took tani ein b'dvarav achronim klum. Reish Lakish says, I read it as simply as what the Mishnah says. Ein b'dvarav klum. His second statement has no meaning, no bearing, and therefore you give the get based on his first statement. Yochanan Amar lecha ein b'dvarav achronim klum d'lechi mitzil. When he becomes of sound mind again, when he's cured, lo tzarech l'mihader im luchebei. You do not have to go back and double check with him whether he's changed his mind or not changed his mind. But you still can't write the get and give the get unless they are of sound mind. Meaning that their incapacity right now, which is they're unable because of their mental deficit to deal with the situation. So Reish Lakish simply means that their retraction is not meaningful because of that. Rabbi Yochanan says that not only is their retraction not meaningful, but anything that is done now on their behalf is also not meaningful. And so therefore you can't be a shliach. Even though you were appointed prior to the disease, you can't carry out the shlichut at this point in time. What seemingly is the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan, it says, v'katav v'natan. The Torah says that you write it and give it. And what Rabbi Yochanan seems to indicate here is that the tiva and the nitzina have to be done while the person is still of sound mind. Which is that you have to, they instruct you to write it and give it, all that has to be accomplished before the person is incapacitated. So, b'maykam iflegei. Reish Lakish midamilei liyashen, someone who is sleeping. Rabbi Yochanan midamilei lishoteh, that's someone who has lost their mind. Rabbi Yochanan nami lidmei liyashen. Why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say that this is like sleeping? Kordiakos is no different than sleeping. If someone instructs you to do something and goes to sleep, you can still carry out their agency while they're sleeping because we don't need them to be awake for you to carry out the agency. But what we do need is that they be of sound mind, and that's what the distinction of Yochanan is going to make. Yashen lo mechusar maseh. Yashen doesn't require anything to emerge from their sleep. They simply wake up, and that's done. Hi, mechusar maseh. Kordiokus is not something that disappears by itself. It will require intervention in order to cure it. Reish Lakish nami nidmei l'shoteh. Why doesn't Reish Lakish compare this situation to being a shoteh, where clearly if one is a shoteh, they cannot grant a get? Shoteh lo samei biyadan. When it comes to shoteh, the cure is not in our hands. We are not in control of when someone who has lost their mind can return to their normal state or to a mentally stable state. On the other hand, ha samei biyadan. And in this case of Kordiakos, the cure is in our hands. I mean, we have the medicinal cure to this sickness, and therefore we control the outcome. Bisra sumka agumrei, this is the one of the first things that we saw back on Daf Samach Zayin, lean meat that on coals, v'chamra marko, and heavily diluted wine. That is the solution to this kordiakus. So we are able to cure him. So he compares it, basically, this sits somewhere between sleeping and losing one's mind. In one sense, it's more like losing one's mind because it has the same impact on the individual. They're not of sound mind. On the other hand, it's more like sleeping, which is we have a way to emerge from it. A person emerges from sleep because they wake up. A person can emerge from this kordiakos because we have a cure for it. But a shoteh is out of one's control, and therefore they are different. And so Rabbi Yochanan says it's more similar to shoteh. Reish Lakish says it's more similar to someone who is sleeping. And based on that, you would then make a determination as to whether you can give a get in that situation. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Tosafot discusses over here whether there is such a girsa in the Gemara. Because the possibility is that the question here is not only on Rabbi Yochanan, but it's also on Reish Lakish. Tosafot says, well, maybe you could explain that it's more apparent or obvious that the question is on Rabbi Yochanan. That he does say in the end there were girsaot that did not have this at all. And that would mean that the question here is not necessarily on Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, or maybe it's more generally on our Mishnah. The question is a stira between the memra of Shmuel who's coming up and the Mishnah that we brought over here, because Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish is simply explaining the Mishnah. The other hand, Tosafot says maybe Rabbi Yochanan, because he says Ein Kotvim explicitly, that's why we bring that as a stira to the statement of Shmuel. The bigger problem also is that why would you ask on Rabbi Yochanan from a statement of Shmuel? Rabbi Yochanan can argue on Shmuel. He argues in Shmuel over Shas. So the fact that you bring a memra from Shmuel and say that that's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan seems not so effective a question. But if you bring a brayta, which we're going to do in a second, then it would be more of a relevant question. So maybe this is just a prelude to the brayta. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Shmuel. Shachat bo shnayim or rov shnayim. A person who was killed in a manner by which they were shechted. And there were two of their simanim, that means both the windpipe and the esophagus were cut. Or rov shnayim, or the rov of both of those. V'ramaz v'amar kitvu get ishti. And he indicates somehow that you should write a get for his wife. Arelo yichtevu v'yidnu. While he's dying here, after he is almost of certain death, then they go ahead and they write it and give it to his wife. Now it's obvious over here that this guy probably can't speak, and so the other people are prompting him, do you want us to give a get to your wife? And he's indicating through his hands and through his face somehow that he agrees to that. Now, over here, Tosafot says, unlike our Mishnah, where in our Mishnah we said you have to test him. He was able to communicate after he lost his ability to speak. You have to test whether he's of sound mind and ask him a bunch of yes and no questions in order to resolve the issue. Over here, Tosafot says that the assumption is that he is of sound mind. Here, the problem is not his mental state. It's his physical state that is the problem. So the assumption is that he's of sound mind unless we see otherwise. And we're going to see a second in Tosafot, he's trying to grapple where that crossover point happens. Betanya, so now we have a bright, the question of why the Gemara brings the bright once you have Shmuel's statement. So the question, my answer might be that the brayta is a more likely case, as David's pointing out here. The case of shachat is very extreme, and the chance of the person even living to be merameis is very low. And over there, that might be an unusual case, versus the case of the brayta, which seems much more plausible, which is ra'u meguyad otsaluv al atzliva. They saw him cut up, Rashi says. They've severed a number of his limbs. Or tzaluv al atzliva, he's hanging. Tzaluv al atzliva, in general, the Aramaic translation of tzalav is in the Torah, like Onkelos, when he translates hanging, he translates it as tzaluv. So that's one meaning, and that would be the meaning in the early days. Tzaluv took on another meaning in the later days, and the Gemara might be already impacted by this, which is crucifixion, which is also used as a tzaluv, and that might be what they are referring to over here, which is tzaluv al atzliva, that he's been hung up. Now again, it doesn't necessarily have to be crucified in the way that of a cross, but some way that the person's been nailed up or hung up, which was a Roman punishment that was done to violators, and later on became a symbol, a religious symbol, because somebody died in that manner. But the origins of it are it's that it's a Roman punishment. And so here, that's probably what the Gemara is referring to in terms of tzaluv al atzliva. V'ramaz v'amar kitvu ged l'ishti arelu yichtevu yitnu. And here he hints to the fact that he wants them to give a get for his wife. They go ahead and they write it and give it to the wife. So here again is a more plausible situation. These are things that are prolonged deaths, and therefore there's more likelihood that this individual would be able to communicate in those situations. Hachi ashta, how can you compare the cases? Hatam data tzilutahi. Over there he is of clear mind. Vikichushutahu da'atchilabe. But he has become weakened in the state that he is. Hacha daita shagishtahi. Over here he's lost his mind. I mean the difference between kodiakus and these cases over here, both of which the individual is somehow incapacitated and he has to hint to the fact that he wants to get given, is the fact that by the case of the tzliva or the case of the miguyad, he is of completely sound mind. It's just now that his physical strength is being sapped from him because of the predicament that he is in. So therefore, when he answers, or he's a romaze, then we can follow through with his instructions, assuming, again, that he will still be alive, and he still will be of sound mind for a duration. This is a slow and painful death. That's why it was used to persecute these individuals. It was a way to create a deterrent for people to do this because of that slow and painful death, and people would have to see and, for long periods of time, watch these people die, and that would cause them not to want to do or violate whatever restrictions they had violated. So because of that, you can assume that they're still alive and they're still of sound mind. Another thing over here, by the case of Kordiakus, this individual is no longer of sound mind. I mean, the change has already happened. The transition has already happened where it's not a physical ailment. This is also a mental ailment immediately. Tosafot over here grapples with an issue that is a serious issue, which is even in the state of physical weakness, there is a point or a threshold by which the person also starts to lose their mind or hallucinate or have issues. And Tosafot says, where is that threshold? It's not clear here. If a person's on their deathbed giving instructions, can you give a get or can you do the things assuming that they're still of sound mind? When do they lose their mind and when do they reach that threshold? That's what he asks over here. Lo yada Rabbeinu Yitzchak ad matay yechashev da'ata atziluta. I don't know until what point, until what threshold the person is still considered to have a clear mind or be of sound mind. It's not to say that they went back when they were giving the get and checked again if he's okay. Because then it wouldn't be a question of Rabbi Yochanan. They went back and checked. Then you know for sure that he's of sound mind. It wouldn't be a question of Rabbi Yochanan. Over here, we're making an assumption that once you see a person, he gives instructions, that he remains in that state. So too, by the case of Kodiyakus. The Gemara's answer is that these states are different. The state here is a state of sound mind and remains that way. The case of Kodiyakus is that he lost his mind. B'shema ad shivadash nitrafat dato yechashev dato tzliduta. Tosa says, maybe the chazoka is, he's of sound mind, until we have evidence to the contrary. Until we know that he's lost his mind, he's considered to be of sound mind. Uveget shchimera, what about a get that's given by someone who's on their deathbed? Omer read, that tzarech lizeher, shelo yitkalkel ben ktiva l'netina. You have to make sure that the person doesn't lose their mind or deteriorate significantly between the writing of the get and the giving of the get. Dimnit kakel bentayim afilu nitpakeach lebesof. Even if he becomes healthy again, ein moil afilu the reish lakish. It doesn't help with regular shakish. Talo sami biyodei upamim sheshchim mirav enu bedato. So because they didn't complete it with that instruction, and the nitina is not done at a time when the person had the same state of being as with the ktiba. So because of that, you have an issue which the Tosfot is grappling with, which is the Gemara clearly acknowledges that there's a period of time where someone who's dying still has clear and salient thoughts and ability to communicate, but then as you get closer and closer to the point of death, that changes. And where that threshold is not clear, and that makes it difficult, because an assumption when you're getting instructions from this individual, you're carrying them out, you need to carry them out while they're still in the same state as when they gave the instructions. If they deteriorate in the interim, then it is a problem. Although, in the end, many believe that if he does come back to a state of healthiness, you can give the get, and it does not preclude him. There's no dichui over here, which is that if he loses and comes back, that all of a sudden that's nidche, and you have to restart the whole process again. But rather, you can carry it out, because here, there is a assumption that it's not that he went crazy or lost his mind, but simply that he was overtaken for a short period of time. And that's only a temporary state like sleeping, not a permanent state of losing one's mind. So now the Gemara questions this whole idea. Can Shmuel really say such a thing that this individual is considered to be alive after their limbs have been severed or if they've been hung up or in the case where they've been shechted, we assume that they're still alive. Therefore, if they give instructions, you write and give the get based on those instructions. If an individual shechs another person, here, whether it was done intentionally or unintentionally, this individual was faced with this predicament that they were nishchat shnaim or rov shnaim, and then they ran away. So the person never witnesses the death of the individual. Me'idim alav, testify about him. You testify that he is dead for his wife to get married. V'isal gadatcha chayhu, amai me'idim alav. Then if he is still alive, why are they me'id on him? So the person never witnesses the death of the individual, yet they can come back to Beit Din and testify this person died, which means that there's certain death involved here. So that seems to be a steer in Shmuel's position. He said before, Shechat Shnayim, if he's Mirameis, you can write and give the get based on that. Over here, we're saying that he's considered to be dead. Which one is it? If he's dead, he can't give a get. If he's alive, he can give a get. But if he's alive, then how do you testify the fact that he's dead? Imrei, Chai hu v'sofu lamut. Meaning that he is alive right now, but it is a certainty that he will die. Meaning that it's an inevitable outcome here is that this person will not survive. So it's certain death, but he's alive. Or the way that Tosafot describes it over here is that Chai hu v'sofu lamut means he's alive now, but he will die immediately afterwards. Elamato, if that's the case, yehi gola al yado. If someone shechs this person unintentionally, then he should have to go into galut. Lama tanya, why do we have a breita? Shechat bo shnayim orov shnayim, someone who accidentally, unintentionally shechted an individual, hezeh eino gola, he does not go into galut. So, over there it seems like the reason you don't go into galut is because the person is not of certain death or not dying immediately. There's some sort of pause between the action and the death of the individual, which now Tosafot notes over here seems to be the Gemara's assumption that galut is talui with that. And that's what Tosafot says, the first white line in Tosafot, because galut talui b'meit la'alter. Galut is dependent on whether the person dies immediately, then you would be subject to galut. Whereas if they don't die immediately, then you would not be subject to galut. And if that's the case over here, our assumption now that the person dies immediately afterwards, which is sofo lamot, should then be a determinant factor where the person has to go into galut. As Tosafot points out, that's the difference between galut and mezid. He says, b'mezid, chayav afilu lo meit alter. If a person kills intentionally and does his damage intentionally, then it doesn't matter whether they die immediately or not. They are subject to the death penalty. Yesh chiluk ben mita legalut. As Tosafot points out, there are many differences between intentional and unintentional killing because of the nature of the difference between galut, the punishment of galut, and mita. And the Gemara in Makot learns a lot of these differences, that galut has exemptions, that you don't go into galut for different killings, even though they're killing. Because the gzerat ha-katub is that galut needs a very specific type of killing and unintentional, where you should have been more careful, and the nature of the killing also impacts over here. So the Gemara's assumption now is that if he dies right away, then you should be subject to galut. Gemara says, Hayit Marla, we already have a qualifying statement about that galut. Amar Rabbi Hoshaya, Chashinan Shema Haruach Bilbalto. We worry about the fact that he did not die from the severing, but rather from the exposure afterwards, is what killed him. Inami Hu Kirevet Mitato. He himself brought on his own death. The way that Rashi describes it over here is Mifarkes. He struggled and moved around a lot, so he accelerated his death in that process. Maybe Nayu, what's the difference between these two reasons? But the common denominator between these two reasons is that the person who unintentionally shechted him was not the final cause of death. The final cause of death was either exposure or the person struggling afterwards. Both of those mean that there is an inevitable death, but as Tosafot said over here, the Gemara here is very focused on the altar. It has to happen immediately. If the immediate result of what the person has done is death, then they will be subject to galut. If there's some sort of interim period in which they are still alive, and there are other contributing factors to their death, then that person won't be subject to galut. Doesn't mean they didn't kill them. Doesn't mean that the person won't die. It just means that the galut is not the punishment for this situation. Again, if they did it intentionally, they will be subject to the death penalty for this. It's an exemption specifically to galut. What's the difference between these two reasons? Igamenayu, the shachte bebeta de shisha, the Gemara that gives this example all the time, is in a marble house, which is not subject to the ruach, to the wind or to the elements, which is that it's completely still inside of there. Upir case. And he struggled. So in that case, according to one who said he struggles causes the death, then that would be the cause there. The one who says it's exposure, over there, there is no exposure because they're inside of a marble house. Inami, the shachte bebara, velo pir case. He shechted him outdoors, meaning exposed to the elements and to the wind, but the person didn't move, didn't struggle at all, and therefore the one who says that it's caused by the exposure, this would be caused by exposure. The one who says, mifarkes, there was no pirkus over here. Tosafot over here discusses whether there's actually a real nafkamina between these reasons, or both of them are true, and the Gemara is just trying to indicate or differentiate between these cases why it would be relevant to have both of them, rather than one of the reasons, or the possibility, as Tosafot says over here, that Tarvayu Baush Yumot Machmat Arotseach, that he has to die because of the killer, Velo Machmat Davar Acher, and not because of some other issue that causes the death. And that's the Machloket here, is what is considered to be an extension of the killer, which is maybe the Pirkus, just the moving of the individual, which is a normal reaction to this situation, would be considered an outcome of the killer, rather than some extraneous item that also causes the death. Whereas the others say that exposure is a natural outcome of the situation, and pirkos is something that is another cause for the death. And as again, as we said before, that Tosfot suggests that maybe both of them are true, and that either one of them would be sufficient reason not to put the person into galut. So the idea is that you actually have three different outcomes halachically for the same act, which is a person who's nishchat, berishtayim, a rov shtayim, a person who's shechted in this way, as far as testifying to their death, you can testify that they will die, because that's an inevitable outcome of this situation. As far as them giving instructions, they can give instructions and you can follow those instructions, meaning that you can write the get and give the get, because even though they will die inevitably, there is a period of time while they're alive of sound mind, and you can follow through with those instructions. As far as galut is concerned, even though the immediate inevitable outcome is death, there is still some sort of delay between the action and the death, and there are other contributory reasons for the death, and that will exempt them from galut. So again, the same act or the same situation will lead to three different halachic outcomes. Nishtatek, the individual who lost their ability to communicate, get they prompt him and say, do you want us to write a get? Over there in the Mishnah it says that he can nod, hirkin rosho. If he nods up and down or side to side, that will be good enough to answer the question. And there Gemara says that we test him with yeses and noes. Gemara says, v'lichushtima shichya delav lav nakte. Wait, assume now that he has a twitch that goes in that direction. He has the no twitch. So that means that every question you ask him, he just twitches to side, and he says no, so you're not getting a real answer. Inami shichya dehein hein nakte. Or he has the twitch of up and down. So his answer to everything, even though they're right answers, but they're coming about not because he's making a voluntary action, it's all involuntary action. Amrav Yosef, Amrav Nume, Amrav Nachman, Damrinele, Bisirugin. We do it in, Sirugin usually means skipping, but also can mean in pairs or back and forth. The way Rashi says it here is unusual, because you wouldn't normally read it this way. Rashi says, Sirugin, Mamtinen ben Harkana, L'Sheila, Sha'a. We wait in between. So Rashi says, instead of asking him questions back to back, in which the twitch would come up and he would say yes every time, you give him a delay in between. And that delay in between, then that gives you a better assessment that if he's still shaking his head in the same direction, that is an acquiescence. On the other hand, many other Rishonim believe that the Serugin over here is that you ask him yes and no questions alternately. Which is you don't keep asking questions that the answer to is yes or the answer is to no, because that way you can discern whether it's simply a twitch or is it an indication of what he's trying to tell you. Why don't we say that that's the type of twitch he has? Whether, according to Rashi, that means that he twitches on an interval, the same interval as when you're waiting to give him the question, or he has the yes-no twitch, that he twitches back and forth, up and down, and so the questions, even if they're yes and no, the twitch could match up with that. So, either they say to him, give him one no answer, two yes answers, and then two no and one yes answer. Now, whether that means you have to do all of these, or you have to do one of these two. We saw back in the Mishnah, Rashi thinks you have to do three yes and three no. From Rashi, it would indicate here that you do all of these, which is that you give him two yes, one no, two yes, or something like that. It's a random selection of questions. Therefore, it would not be a pattern of twitching, which we do assume if it's an involuntary action. An involuntary action can happen in patterns. That's true. And it can happen on a single way or in a pattern which shifts back and forth. What it doesn't do is show up in these random type of patterns, and that's why you can be certain then if you ask the questions in this manner that the person's answering voluntarily. If you are in the summertime, you ask him winter questions. If it's the wintertime, you ask him summer questions. The Tosfot over here suggests that the Beit Rabbi Shmuel is not arguing on our Mishnah and saying that the method of checking our Mishnah is wrong. He's just offering an alternative way to check, but not necessarily arguing on the Mishnah itself. My Nihu, what are the type of questions you ask him? Ilema, Glufkare, Visadine, the other Gersolta, Gushpakar, and Sadine, which means we ask him about a cloak or about light wear. In the wintertime, you'd expect him to ask for a coat or something heavier wear to warm up. And in the summertime, you'd expect him to ask for the lighter, sadinim, or pishtan, linen, which is used as a summer clothing. It's very easy that even if it's the wintertime, Could be that he's burning up with fever, and the reason he doesn't want a coat or he wants summer clothing is because he's burning up with fever. Or the other way around, in the summertime, even though it's the summertime, he could be caught by the chills. So the answer to that question is not going to give you an indication of whether he's sound mind, just because he says something about, in the summertime he's asking for a coat, and the wintertime he's asking for lighter clothing. Now Tosafot says this chashash is not a strong enough chashash that will say that maybe the get is good or not good and will leave her in a state of igun, of safek get, not safek get. It's just a reason to say that this check is not a definitive check. And so it's a question that undermines the bedikah here, but not a strong enough question where then we'd also have suspicions about whether the get's a real get or not a real get in these types of situations. Ela bepeire, with fruits. You ask him about seasonal fruits. So Tosafot points out over here, you can't just ask him about seasonal fruits because he might love a fruit. If you ask him, do you want that type of fruit? He might say yes, not because of seasons, but simply because he loves that fruit. So what you have to ask him is, do you want me to go pick from the tree that fruit? So that's an indication of whether he knows it's something that's in season or out of season. Do you want me to get that off the tree now? That would be a clear indication of his sound-mindedness in these situations. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph.